GreenSense is brought to you by JLT Specialty USA, the world's largest energy insurance broker, serving the entire energy continuum. Visit JLTUS.com.
Welcome to GreenSense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
Hey, that's me. I serve as host to GreenSense.
I'm Bob Kessler. I'm your executive producer.
Each week, Bob and I introduce you to people that are changing the world and making it a better place to live with their sustainable ideas.
Those ideas do have to make two kinds of sense, so economic sense and common sense. That's how they get here on GreenSense.
And then it's my job to show how they make environmental sense. Bob, who do you have this week?
Well, this week, General Motors, you know, they're a big old company, but they're doing a lot of really innovative things. Looking back at 2016, many, many of their facilities throughout the world now went zero waste and landfill free. So we'll check in with them. Also, here's a term to remember, behind the meter power storage. May not know what it is, but we're going to see big growth in that in the coming years. We'll talk to someone from Green Tech Media about it.
Well, these sound like two both very diverse and very interesting innovations, and that's all coming up on this week's edition of GreenSense. GM, which already has been working on environmental innovations like the all-electric Chevy Bolt and self-driving cars, has just announced several of its production facilities will be landfill-free, meaning everything's either reused or recycled. Joining us now is John Bradburn, Global Manager of Waste Reduction for General Motors. Welcome to GreenSense, John.
Thank you, Robert. Appreciate being with you.
You just announced that GM operates 152 global facilities that are at zero waste and either recycle, reuse, or make energy out of all their waste from daily operations. Give us an idea of how much material a car manufacturing facility uses in a day or a year. Put that in context for us.
Okay, just to give you a visual, as a company around the world, we generate over 2 million tons annually that we reuse and recycle. And just to understand what that might look like, if you put it in the back end of Chevy Silverado pickups, park them end for end, that amount in 1 year would wrap around the world. So this is a lot of material, and that's why we look very seriously at making sure we manage in the best possible way.
So how much waste have you reduced from going into a landfill this year over the previous year?
Well, we've added 23 operations this year alone, which was a banner year, our best year ever. We've averaged right around 12 operations per year added to this list. And this is really due to the enthusiasm. It's about people being excited about doing this. People want to do the right thing. They want to reuse and recycle materials or not generate them. And based on that, we were able to get this work done way ahead of schedule. 4 years ahead of our goal, 2020, was a goal to have this many on board.
As you mentioned, you're adding a number of facilities, and these facilities aren't just in the U.S., but they're in South America, Asia, even in Africa. How challenging is it to get to zero waste in other locations around the world?
Well, it was a bit tricky. We needed to understand just what sort of infrastructures existed within those areas. And what we found was really interesting in that some areas of the world are very good at doing things such as, you know, sorting and collecting. And we shared those methods and combined them with various technologies in more developed countries bringing together best practices, lessons learned. We have monthly calls with our environmental teams around the world, and we share these ideas. We find solutions. And in many cases, what we've done is created businesses working with local suppliers in some of these challenged areas who have developed businesses just to handle these streams, which has helped the local community because other companies are joining in and jumping on board and getting these materials processed too. So it's kind of a movement, but it's also sharing really best practices and understanding how do we do things in better ways, moving materials up their hierarchy, reusing, for example, rather than recycling.
One man's trash is another man's cash, is the old adage in the waste business. So being able take those waste streams and create feedstocks is really what we're all after. And you just mentioned something else very interesting. Being able to use that waste feedstock to its highest use. Speak to that a little bit.
Okay. Well, there is certainly a waste hierarchy, and really companies need to aspire to that. So if it's not going to go into the landfill, which we don't want to do, we want to either compost it or recycle it. Even better than that, we can reuse it. Even better than that is to eliminate it. We try to keep materials in their use phase as long as possible, but in doing so, we want to do it in the best possible way that benefits society and benefits the company, grows economies, and develops jobs. So these are ways that we deploy. And an example of that or two would be to take our steel baskets where the Chevrolet Bolt is going to be built in Orion, Michigan. These are parts baskets coming in from Korea. Rather than melt them steel baskets and recover the metal, which is what's typically done today, that's recycled, that's good, we're reusing them by way of putting them around in Detroit in urban gardens. And they're serving the local community there in some challenged neighborhoods, in fact, with healthy, fresh food. So that's a reuse. Chevy Volt, the battery cover itself, very challenging material to recycle because it's called a thermoset. It's a cross-linked plastic. So reuse is the best, or repurposing, more specifically, where we're making nest boxes for wildlife and endangered species. We've got 900 of these out around North America now, and for birds and owls and waterfowl. So that's reuse. Those are just two examples, and there's many more.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Green Sense. I'm Robert Colangelo. My guest is John Bradburn, Global Manager of Waste Reduction for General Motors. John, you have an interesting title, Global Manager of Waste Reduction. How many of your counterparts have similar functions in their operations? Are you unique?
Well, I think we take it very seriously. Other companies do as well. My title itself really revolves around looking at waste as a resource out of place. We have many, many companies that we work with throughout the year, and those do include other auto companies or manufacturing, very large, small, entrepreneurs, artists, all various groups to manage these sort of materials. The environmental teams are who I work with, and other companies have environmental engineers as we do. But I think based on our goals and objectives, the aspirational goal one, to be a totally zero waste company, speaks to how seriously our entire organization looks at it, from our top executives all the way across our organization. So it's become part of our business operating procedure, or our global manufacturing system, in fact.
Well, you announced that GM has generated up to $1 billion from recycling in recent years. So let's talk a little bit about the economics of a zero waste policy. The obvious ones is it reduces disposal costs, it uses inputs more efficiently, and as we talked about in other countries, you could create revenue streams by selling waste as a feedstock to other manufacturers. Embellish on that a little bit. Tell us a little bit more about the economics of zero waste policies and the other intangible benefits.
That's right, because there are many benefits beyond the dollars, but obviously sustainable development calls for financial gain. And in this case, we found it. We put the numbers together, and it really surprised us several years ago that there was so many dollars involved. And those dollars come from, obviously, recycling and selling our byproducts. However, our goal, a long-term aspirational goal, is to generate $0. And what that really means is that we're consuming those materials that we bring into our systems within our processes, meaning we're 100% efficient. That's the aspirational goal, and should be of any company, to be as efficient as possible. But when one's not, and really no system's perfect, right? We try our best generate revenue, but also those intangibles, like you mentioned, Robert. We want to help society. We want to, you know, help protect the natural resources and keep materials in their use phase as long as possible. Our water bottle project, for instance, in Flint is one example where we're collecting water bottles from several plants, including the Flint area community water bottles, and turning them into coats for the homeless. We're making vehicle parts for the Chevy Equinox, and we're also making filters. Those filters are going to filter the air, and are filtering here in Flint, in our plants and other areas, and are made in Flint as part of a jobs and development training program. So those are some of the intangibles. Those are some of the ways a company can be transformed from good to great, helping the community and keeping materials in use phase.
Well, in the real estate development business, there's an old adage, see one, do one, teach one. And it sounds like you follow that one also, as GM mentors 25 companies a year on the business case for zero waste. So you're out there helping other companies get to this goal. Who are some of the companies you've helped, and what have they learned?
Well, the companies are really a vast, broad spectrum of companies, from small, medium, large businesses, entrepreneurs, artists, even companies that are just being formed, so that we can share these ideas. They are companies that aspire to be more sustainable and really be able to work into the future. They include governments, even nonprofits, food and beverage, building, construction. We offer to these companies our best practices, and we have a blueprint for zero waste, in fact, that's available to anybody. It's online, and we can share that, which shows how we've done this over our 25-year or even longer time of accomplishing this zero waste movement. We do it on an individual basis, but we also talk to them about specific challenges they may have. Our experience has led us to the point where a company can call us, and they do very often, and say, you know, I've got this particular material, what do you think? And we bring those companies together. We connect what we call the green dots. It really is about idea exchange, and it's imperative for us, too, to move forward.
John, thanks for joining us on Green Sense, and we really commend you on your efforts, because when big companies make big changes, they have big results. So keep up the good work.
Thank you, Robert. We appreciate the work you do and spreading, because we always say that a project's not complete until it's talked about. So again, thanks for this opportunity.
That's John Bradburn, Global Manager of Waste Reduction for General Motors. I'm Robert Colangelo. This is Green Sense.
StartEngine has raised millions for green companies, selling shares directly to the general public. GreenSense Farms has raised close to $500,000, and Elio Motors close to $17 million. If you need capital for your business, go to startengine.com and start raising the money you need.
GreenSense is sponsored by JLT Specialty USA, experienced professionals ensuring energy, technology, and aerospace, serving complex risk with creative solutions. Visit usa.jlt.com.
Behind the meter energy storage. Remember that term. Maybe it's not one you're familiar with. Currently, only a small amount of energy is stored this way. but big growth is predicted. To explain, we're joined by Brett Simon, energy storage analyst with Green Tech Media Research. Brett, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me, Robert.
Well, let's start real simple. Explain what behind-the-meter energy storage is and why it's something we should be aware of.
Ooh, great question. That's a great way to frame the conversation. So behind-the-meter energy storage really takes the form of storage that's sited with a customer. So that can take the form of either a residential customer, so in something like a home or an apartment complex even, or with a commercial or industrial customer. So that would be, at a hospital, you might see that at a factory and so on and so forth.
Somebody gets electricity and then what? From a utility.
So someone could receive electricity from a utility and then store it at a battery that's just sited at their home or business. Or alternatively, if they have something like solar panels on site, they could take any excess solar generation that they don't use in real time and store it in that battery.
Is the Tesla Powerwall an example of this? And first, maybe explain to our listeners what the Tesla Powerwall is.
Sure. Yeah, that's actually probably the best known example, I would say, by the general public is the Tesla Powerwall. The Tesla Powerwall is a home storage product that residential customers can purchase and install in their place of residence, and they can use that to self-consume electricity that they store either from the grid or from solar panels placed on their house.
What are the other ways that customers can do behind-the-meter storage?
Sure. So most behind-the-meter storage takes the form of a battery. And to date, lead acid has been fairly popular for, off-grid applications. And we're seeing lithium ion get more popular. There are other storage technologies that exist. One that's, getting a decent amount of press now is thermal storage, which essentially involves a system where you can make and store ice and then use that to help with your air conditioning.
Interesting. Well, we've got to talk about the economic advantages to it. And like all new technologies, it sometimes takes a little while to be cost effective. But go ahead and give us the pitch, why this makes economic sense.
Sure. I'm going to turn the question around a little bit and admit that right now, most of the early adopters are buying storage for an emotional reason. So still in most cases, behind-the-meter storage, particularly for residential customers, is not necessarily economic. When it comes to commercial customers, there is a case for something called demand charge management. So a lot of commercial customers are on a bill that has three portions. So they pay a fixed rate every month. They also pay a volumetric charge per every unit of energy they consume, and they also pay a demand charge based on their highest period of consumption. And you can effectively use storage to clip that peak period and thus reduce your electricity bill. On the residential side, we are seeing some potential for economic cases in states like Hawaii, where net metering is getting rolled back. So with a combination of high electricity prices and a reduction in the value you can get for exporting any excess solar electricity generated, there's that case that it might be better to store your solar electricity and consume it later rather than just have a solar panel and then export anything you don't consume to the grid.
What about as a backup power source when your power goes out? Can that be an application?
For sure, yeah. Backup power is definitely something that's of interest to customers. But again, that's something that, it's more of an emotional play right now, given that, diesel generators still for a backup purpose are quite cheap in comparison. But where energy storage is interesting in that case is that whereas a backup generator, you're really only going to be using it, for those times when the grid goes down. A behind-the-meter battery system, you could use at other times even when you have electricity. So either, going back to that self-consumption piece or, having other opportunities if there's a way for your utility to actually call on that system and use it to supply grid services.
You're listening to Green Sense. I'm Robert Colangelo. My guest is Brett Simon, energy storage analyst with Green Tech Media Research. And we're talking about the behind-the-meter energy storage as a new wave of energy storage. Brett, we talked about the economic advantages. Let's touch on environmental. Are there any environmental advantages to battery storage?
Most certainly, yeah. Especially as we see an interest rising in deploying renewable energy resources, one of the biggest challenges with renewable energy is that these resources are intermittent. So when the sun's not shining or the wind's not blowing, you won't be able to generate power from your solar panels or your wind turbines. But where energy storage can come in is they can actually, these systems can store that excess generated electricity at times of high generation and use it later when your sources aren't generating.
Well, your new report from GTM Research tells us that the behind-the-meter segment will account for half of the annual U.S. market in megawatt terms by 2021. That's remarkable. What do you attribute all that growth to?
Yeah, well, there are a number of factors for the behind-the-meter market that are going to drive a lot of growth. So I think that, a few that are worth pointing out. One is that we're seeing the economics improve. So the costs of these systems are coming down year over year as both, the manufacturing enterprises scale up and then the actual process of putting these systems together improves. Another piece is when we look at policy. So we're seeing net energy metering reforms underway in a few states. So Hawaii, Arizona, Nevada, just to name a few. And in these cases, formerly it made more sense to install a solar system and just any solar energy that you didn't use, you would just export to the grid to get recompense from your utility. But now these reforms, it might make sense in more cases to actually install a battery system and consume any excess solar PV electricity later by storing it in your battery. A few more pieces that are interesting is we're seeing a lot of C&I customers start to look at storage for bill reduction. I mentioned a little while ago using it to clip those demand charges. And so that's of growing interest. And actually, GTM published a report earlier this year where we looked into some of the economics of storage for demand charge management for commercial industrial customers and found that going out to 2021, the case expands, from just a handful of states today to, about a dozen states.
You know, this doesn't sound very sexy. Is there something, and that's okay. Things don't have to be sexy to be exciting and to make a big difference out there. But is there something that we haven't talked about, about behind-the-meter energy storage that our listeners should know about?
Ooh, that's a great question. And, I could probably talk all day about that. But when it comes to a factor that could be considered sexy is just really the ability to manage your energy. I think Tesla is really moving in that direction with now acquiring SolarCity and kind of having this three-part business with energy storage, solar PV, and electric vehicles. So there's that opportunity to really have energy that you are generating yourself and consuming yourself in the way that you choose. And I think, I think that's pretty exciting. And, will we see, even half the households of America do this within the next 10 years? Definitely not, but it is something that is, going to increasingly make sense and increasingly become interesting for people around the world.
I have to ask this last question, and it's not about technology, it's about politics. With the new President-elect Trump coming into office and having seems like an anti-green policy, anti-renewable energy, clean tech policy, what are your thoughts and how is that going to impact the industry?
Ooh, that's a great question. Well, one thing I'll say that I think is in storage's favor is that there are quite a few domestic energy storage companies in the U.S. We mentioned Tesla and they get the most press earlier, but there's other companies like Stem, Green Charge, SunVerge, just JexPro, just to name a handful that are U.S. based and really are pretty active in this market. So I think you know, with the new president-elect's plan to drive job growth and, you know, drive American industry, I think energy storage, you know, will have some increasing opportunities. And I think it's heartening, too, that we've seen that, you know, Elon Musk has been chosen as an advisor to the new administration. So, you know, I wouldn't say that there's necessarily going to be, you know, a huge revolution and a, you know, massive benefit for storage as a result of the new administration, but I don't think we're going to see it necessarily scaled back.
Well, Brett, we appreciate you being on Green Sense and would love to have you back on again as you come up with new ideas that save us money and make the planet a safer and better and more sustainable place to live.
Thank you so much, Robert. I really appreciate being on the show.
That's Brett Simon, Energy Storage Analysis with Green Tech Media's research. I'm Robert Colangelo. This is Green Sense. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of Green Sense. We learned why behind-the-meter power storage systems are important, and we heard the great things that GM is doing on a large-scale basis to reduce their waste.
Yeah, you know, talking to John Bradburn from GM, he was saying in his family they've had like 300 years with GM. He's, you know, his father worked for GM and his grandfather, and goes back something like a total of 300 years. Not that GM's been around that long, but in terms of people years. So good guy to talk to.
Well, and it's important to have that institutional memory and commitment to a company. And that's why maybe they do these great things and are making these great environmental innovations. They really seem to care. Well, now you should never be able to miss a Green Sense show. All you have to do is visit our website at greensensefarms.com, and you could subscribe to a podcast, or you could view the list of radio stations that air our show. If you want to get to me, send me an email at robert@greensenseshow.com. Our goal here at Green Sense is to be an honest broker of environmental information so that you can make good decisions. We hope our guests have inspired you to action. Now it's your time. Remember, no matter how big, you don't have to be a GM. You could be an individual with just a good idea. Get millions of people behind you then, and take that small idea multiplied by all those people, and that crowd can create great action. So do your part, make a difference. Stay fresh, keep innovating, because when you're green, you grow.
Green Sense is recorded in the Duneland ecosystem on the eastern shores of Lake Michigan at Green Sense Farms, the largest indoor commercial vertical farm in the world. We walk the walk and talk the talk, growing leafy green vegetables 24/7, free of pesticides, herbicides, with non-GMO seeds, conserving resources, and reducing waste. Watch us grow. The program is copyright Green Sense Farms, all rights reserved.